If you wish it, World and Wordsmith, Eddie Izzard will come on the show. Yes, Nina Porzuka here, and you heard it right. And many of you, Chris Voss, Jonathan Sims, Simon Dowling, that's just a few of the folks who tweeted at us, even guessed it. Today on the podcast,
The World in Words is made possible in part, not fully, but just in part, by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence. Not 49 years of excellence and 1 year of poo, but 50 years of excellence. Well done.
Comedian, humanist, transvestite, polyglot, and as it turns out, podcast listener, Eddie Izzard is the subject of our podcast today. And just to warn you, there will be some explicit language in this podcast. So if you're listening with the kiddos, now is a good time to put in your earbuds. Eddie Izzard's stand-up is full of bits about language.
The Romans, they took over everything. They could do that. They had aqueducts, viaducts. They could move ducks around faster than anyone ever had. And the Romans did all this with a language that we know from school is silly. It's a silly, billy language. It has a nominative, a vocative, accusative, a genitive, a dative, an ablative. Fuck off. How did they do so much with a language so silly?
But back in the late 90s, it wasn't enough just to joke about language. Eddie wanted to joke in other languages. And he joked about that too. I mean, how hard is it really to learn another language?
The one thing about speaking languages, it's not rocket science. You don't have to invent the fucking words. They're just there. You just got to look at them and go, okay, I got it now. What was it again? And then look it up. You don't have to say, well, how do we come up with a word for a cow? What the hell are we going to call the cat thing? Let's call it bzuma. You know, it's already there. Just got to learn it in different languages. So
yeah, it's just that easy. But perhaps for Eddie, it is. He started doing stand-up in French in 1997, and over nearly two decades, he's gone on to do stand-up in German and Spanish. Language learning for him is all about confidence. That's at least what he told me when I spoke with him. He had lots to say about it, and lots to say very quickly, I might add.
I came into comedy as my... I'm giving you this as if you've asked me a question. I'm just going
on. Yeah.
I don't need questions.
As long as we get like, to language, we're going to talk language.
It's yeah, okay. Yeah. Anyway, so with English speakers, particularly with English speakers, and then with every other speaker, that they might be able to speak a certain language to a certain level, but their confidence, their ability, it might be, say, 60%, and their confidence is down at 30 or 20%. Anyone going into a second language, third language, they have a confidence level. Like my confidence level in German, my ability is about 40. I'm about 40% fluent, I estimate. My first ever French gig, I lost all my ability to talk to an audience. Well, I was just breaking. I was breaking into English. It is awful, and I didn't know how to do it.
Bonsoir, hi, hey, bienvenue à le spectacle. Un peu plus tard que. Est-ce qu'il y a anglais ici? Are there English people here?
Yeah.
Il y a français ici aussi?
Yeah.
Ah, parce que, well, I'm going to try and do both languages, okay? And then everyone's going to be fucked off. Tout le monde est très pissed off. Qu'est-ce que c'est pissed off en français?
You'll see me stand on the stage with what looks like a Bible of a thing in my hand. It is the translation of the entire show.
Verbatim, like you translated word for word into...
I gave it to someone, to one, transcribe it, and then to someone else to translate it. And then I got it, and it landed on the... You know, I could throw it down on the desk, and they go, thump, you know, thump, trying to do the noise in the radio. Big bounce, you know, big heavy... like War and Peace of a thing. And I said, I'm not learning that. I'm just not going to sit there and learn that page by page. I decided, having someone work very hard on it, that I would just, I would sort of wing it.
If you want to watch it in English, go to Angleterre, you know? C'est un grand pays. Je suis là pour, you know, a whole fucking month in London. Il y a la Eurostar. Prendre un billet et vous allez à Angleterre. Mais ici, je sais, parce que nous sommes Européens, oui, we're European.
But in the end, I've worked out now a complete system of how to do things with my brother, Marc Izzard, who's the language expert. He speaks French, German, and Spanish pretty fluently.
Wow.
He's done a year of Russian now, so Russian's the next one after Spanish. I have to get Spanish first. And then we go for Arabic. We were both born in Yemen, so...
Yeah, you were born in the colony of Aden.
Should say it's Aden.
Aden,
we were born
sorry.
In Aden, because, of Aden. Course, yeah, we took
now
it over
Yemen.
Doing... My dream is to go back to Aden and do a gig. It's tricky at the moment. There's a civil war on.
Yeah, it'd be a little
but,
hard.
But Cairo is where we're going to go to learn. That is the place. Everyone says get to Cairo. You've got to learn Egyptian Arabic because they do all... Because the dialects are quite different in Arabic. Egyptian Arabic. Everyone seems to understand that, which I think is similar to in Scandinavia, where the Danish and the Norwegians understand Swedish, but not the other way around.
Mm.
Probably because there's a lot more television. It's 10 million population in Sweden and roughly five in...
So you're going to learn Egyptian Denmark. Arabic then?
Egyptian Arabic, street Arabic. I want the swearing. I want the, like in French, the ability to say putain, ah, putain. Which is the F word, it's the F bomb, as you call it in America, in France. And it really means prostitute or, I suppose, whore. So you're going to say, oh, whores to this, whores to that. You sound like an English colonel in the Raj. Oh, whores, whores everywhere. Well, anyway, I said this perfectly. I got the hang of this because you think it would be merde.
Yeah, exactly.
But it isn't exactly. And they do say it whenever someone gets really angry. And I said it playing in Paris. And somebody started going, ah, putain. And these French guys just looked at me and I thought, wow, they're looking at me with that look of, hey, he swears like us. That is arriving.
Swearing like the natives.
Swear like a native.
So you had this successful career in English. You're doing, you know, huge arenas. Why, like, what made you decide to do that first French show and then do German and then do Spanish? And how many are you doing now? Like, how many languages?
I've started my fourth. I've started Spanish, but I've only done 1 week in Madrid. But I do know the technique now. We've got this extreme technique, which is my brother translates the entire show, line for line. We've got the lines into a very good set, because I was very loose with the lines before. I'd change them a lot of the time. But I made it with my help of my brother, saying that line, that to that line, to that line, to that line. He translated the lines, and he put it into good French, but not brilliant French. So the equivalent of English, where you say, I went down the road and I went to have a cup of tea, rather than I promenaded down the route and thought about some victuals for myself. You know, you're not putting in those words, which, you know...
Spoken British, language. Sort.
Yeah, spoken language, real decent spoken language, which was better than my... This is the weird thing. People come and see the show in French, and they'd see me... deliver, you know, a really good spoken French show, and then they come off and have a chat with me and go, he doesn't speak that well.
You've got to start some fucking time learning French. What are you doing here if you don't speak French, for fuck's sake? So I'm going to try, you know, if you do get pissed off, then just storm out and go, well, I'm fucked off. And I'm not going to apologise. Je ne apologise pas. Okay, so, dun-dun-dun, comedy, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Because I speak quite well, but I'm now about 75% fluent.
Did you learn in school? Like, where did you pick up?
Yeah, I just did 8 years there. 8 years there, but everything has been after that. My radical idea is school is good, but there's nothing to compare with being in the country. Deep immersion is the way. Immersion is the key thing. And I say that 1 month in the land is equivalent to 2 years of training in the school, something like that.
I feel like it's impossible to learn another language actually without being like fully immersed. I mean, there are the people
really
that are like amazing at language learning that you're like, I hate you. How do you do it so well? You seem to be one of those. But
no, I do it by immersion. I did it on the last German show. The German show had done 2 years at school, 76 to 78, only that. I got a B in German in 2 years, which I thought was pretty good. And then I went back in 2014, I think it was. 2014. Anyway, I did 2 months there. They have a nominative, accusative, dative, and genitive. They have four declensions. I decided I will not learn those. I will not go back and relearn them and apply them to every, because they're going to be different for each word. I'm just going to guess them. And even the masculine, feminines, and neuters, I'm going to guess. And I'll let the intelligent German people work out where I'm going wrong and just twist it in their head so that I get it right.
The Samten, the Goethe Hassanons, wir müssen sie glücklich machen. Quick, schnell, tanzen wir für die Goethe.
Eddie Izzard's comedy is more like a one-man show. Yes, it feels loose and conversational, but it's actually pretty highly rehearsed. And in fact, a lot of his shows have these sets and elaborate entrances. He even appears out of a book in one of his earlier shows, Definite Article. So translating his one-man show into other languages seems to have worked out pretty well. I read a review about your German show that said, quote, "During Force Majeure, Izzard gets to grips with German sentence structure and declensions, earning knowing applause from the Berlin crowd for his perfect use of the fiendishly tricky genitive case at one stage."
Oh, wow. Well, that's my... That's
isn't that great?
That's a salute to my brother, but sometimes I would ad lib and get it right, the genitive. Oh, but there were words that I would do just because I loved it, like ausgezeichnet. Ausgezeichnet.
What does that mean?
I loved saying that. That means excellent. And it's you have to go the TS, it's Z in it, so it's ausgezeichnet. So I spent ages saying it. And I'd put also the word, I'd swear in the middle of it, because it means excellent. I'd say, I wanted to say fucking excellent. So I'd say, ausgezeichnet, baby. We got to do this. It's fantastic. Ausgezeichnet, because you are there. Du bist hier. Sie sind hier in Berlin. Ich bin ein Engländer. Ich spreche auf Deutsch. Das ist wunderbar. Das ist ausgezeichnet, baby. And sie sind die Pionier. You are the pioneers. All the audiences are kind of like telling them they're pioneers, because they're there watching it. And they're choosing to go. Everyone says there's a different sense of humor.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
This is not true. N-O-T true. It's the references that are different. American references will trip up an American comedian when playing abroad, because if he says, and then I hit him with a Hershey's bar.
So the nut of what's funny is the same all over the world,
is
what you're saying.
Humor
is universal. Do you find, though, that the Germans, the French, or the Spanish laugh at different places?
No, exactly the same places. I have a line that I can go through it in three languages. Caesar, did he ever think, I just talk about Caesar, I'm saying, Caesar, did he ever think he'd end up as a salad? And so people in English seem to laugh at that. Oh, yes, yeah, Caesar salad, we get it. And in French, Caesar, est-ce qu'il a jamais imaginé, did he ever imagine, qu'un jour, il finirait, one day he'd finish up, en salade, he'd finish up as a salad. And in German, you've got the verb at the end of the sentence. You'd really think this would throw it all, because they put this verb at the end, but it goes, Caesar hat je gedacht, did he ever think, dass einmal, that he one time, als Salat enden würde, as salad end up would have? And still, they laugh in exactly the same place.
Huh.
Guaranteed, time for time. Maybe not mainstream audiences. I did play to a mainstream audience in London who didn't get what I was talking about,
really?
Which is interesting. Yeah. So all you've got to do is have your references universal or explain your references. So if you wanted to talk about Hershey's bar, which is really not known outside America, I don't believe, where's Kit Kats are, you can hit someone with a Kit Kat and they go, ah, yeah, Kit Kats. Were cookie. But if you said, no, there's a thing called Hershey's bar and this guy called Hershey's made it and there it is, and I've never eaten one, but I know they exist. And then once you've explained a term, you can talk about it in your comedy. You can talk about it for hours. You can make a whole show about it if you want, because people will know what it is. It's a chocolate thing. Oh, yeah, we know chocolate, yeah.
Well, has that been that universal aspect, or learning all these languages, has it changed the way you approach comedy?
Yes, I've dumped all puns, all jokes about with sayings included in them, and all very British references.
Even when you're doing English shows?
Yeah, because I'm too lazy to change. I mean, I'm a very hardworking, lazy person. So the idea that I have a whole set that I do in Britain and then a whole set I don't. I mean, you know, this is 28 countries I've played now. But, you know, they get it in Moscow. The kids in Moscow get it. Kids in St. Petersburg, in Istanbul, in Berlin. And I appeal to American comedians, get out there, go for it, do it. Play around the world. You can now play in English. So just you don't want to do all the different languages. Okay, but assume the intelligence of the people you're talking to, and they will work with you if you're making the effort.
There is nothing more humbling like than being in a language that you do not speak and learning how to communicate and realizing that you can communicate.
Well, you can get by, I'd say.
You can't have philosophical conversations, sure.
But you become like a child with a, you know, your communication levels run down to children. This is the beautiful thing that I've built up in French. And the next show I'm planning to, which I'm hoping to give a Russian name to, a salute to the Russians. I want to start in France and develop it on the stage. And so they call it rodage. So we got work in progress. do that on the stages. So I will actually be ad-libbing stuff because I don't write anything. I
just in French work first.
In French. And that will take my French to another level. And the first 2 weeks of that will be horrendous.
That first time that you stood on stage and you did stand up in French,
yeah.
Were you terrified? I mean, was it? Yeah. Was it, were you scared?
It's documented. I went backstage and I said, fuck. I just said, fuck, about 100 times. Because it had actually been set up wrong. I asked for a very closed room, invited audience, just me. But it was an invited audience. But it was a stage with an open bar shared with anyone else in the area who wanted to come and drink. A big horseshoe-shaped thing. It was such a wrong place to be. I panicked about that. And then I thought, oh, I can't really lose on this. Because even if I just stand up there, that'll be the brave thing.
Funniest, bravest thing ever.
Yeah, it wasn't funny. It was not funny. They asked people afterwards. And all the bilinguals, people were going, and it wasn't. I know. I was there. I was just sweating, struggling. I couldn't get it out. But I did it.
How long before you felt funny in French?
First one I did in 97. In 98, I did a week. So I would guess about three or four gigs into those first six gigs, I would have started to feel, oh, some of this is landing. Then in 2000, I did 2 weeks. And the second week felt okay.
Nous seulement 5 millions d'années. Les idiots dinosaures, 160 millions d'années. Si un dieu a créé les dinosaures, il était sous crack. Tous les dinosaures sont stupides. Les grands dinosaures, rah. Les petits dinosaures, rah. Les gros dinosaures, rah. Les minces dinosaures, rah. Pas de poésie pour les dinosaures, oui.
There was never a point I thought that it wouldn't work when they say, oh, the English human, because there's a thing in Britain we say, which I don't know if you say it in America, say, the French have a visual sense of humor. We just say that. One line, all 60 million of them, they just have a visual sense of humor. Do you have that in America or not?
Well, no, we do have the Germans have no sense of humor.
Yes, now we got that one. That must be a World War II, World War I thing. But the truth is, there are some Republicans in America who absolutely have no sense of humor. Tea Party, no sense of humor. That. You know, there's a lot of people in Britain, no sense of humor. You know, every country you can find, there are the no sense of humor people, there are the some sense of humor people, and then there are strong sense of humor people. And then there's also surreal sense of humor, political sense, prefer this, prefer that, prefer observational. There are no nationalities that own all the
types of funny
nuances, yeah. It's like jazz. Jazz is an American-built style of music. But if a brilliant jazz saxophonist was born in China, you'd say that, God, a great jazz player that Chinese kid is. You wouldn't go, oh, you're not allowed to. No, it's an American thing. You Chinese have this sense of music or that sense of music. The sense of music, because rock and roll came out of America, but then, oh, the Beatles, also the Brits could do it. Well, actually, anyone can do it if you want to do it. It's just the sensibility. It's just a style of music.
It sounds terrifying. I mean, I guess doing comedy in general, stand-up, is terrifying. And then I think taking it and putting it in another language, terrifying.
Well, there's an equivalent. Driving. Everyone does it. And we went through that terrifying period. Stand-up is the equivalent of saying, here's a car. Okay, that's the clutch control. Okay, you're going to put that down. You're going to feel it. It's going to be a biting point there. Okay, you're going to use the gear shift. You're going to use that whip. Look in your mirror. Check. Now just drive in traffic. That's what we do.
Is it terrifying, though, to get to a point when you're in a car and you're suddenly, like, not thinking about driving so much to the point you get into an accident because you totally get it taken for granted? Well, like, can comedy feel the
happen?
Same way?
Well, I don't think that happens. I think people take it so for granted, but they get really attuned with it. They actually, you know, drive for 3 hours, have a big chat, and think, I don't even remember where I was going. I think everyone goes to that place, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're unsafe. I have been driving along, having a chat, and then suddenly cut into my emergency. What you're looking out for dickheads on when you're driving. That is all that driving comes on once you're experienced. You're just looking out for idiots.
Try driving in Boston. Oh, God.
Yeah, well, try driving in London or Paris. Paris, go around the Arc de Triomphe, you have 7 lanes and no rules. And the rules, the lines are not marked.
Well, they call people massholes here for the way that they drive.
Well, it's, yes, we can all...
It's
our
universal.
Traffic is worse than your traffic. Yeah, yes.
Okay, fine. Traffic, universally hated. Although ultimately driving is not that terrifying anymore after many years of doing it, I still am terrified at the thought of standing on stage in front of thousands of people and being funny. And then to be funny in another language, forget it. But Eddie Izzard, he just doesn't seem to have fear. But he insisted, to me, that it all just has to do with this system that he's developed to perform in a different language.
I can learn 3 minutes a day of a show.
Like memorization.
Yes, memorize like a play. Mm. And this happens because I'm an actor as well, and I've done plays. It's not so alien to me, whereas for other comedians, I might go, really? Am I going to do that? Anyway, so I learn it like a play. So an hour's show should take me 20 days of intensive work, which probably means, which is 3 weeks. It probably take me 4 weeks to, because your brain tends to overheat. I mean, it really is just sitting there banging it into your head. And then the night when you do it, a lot of it will fall out of your head.
Have you had a moment on stage where you're like what's the next?
Oh, no, lots of, well, hang on. No, I have someone in the wings with the script, or it could be my brother.
Okay.
And I say in German, that's bitter, or it's what you say in British theatre. You say, line, please. You just say, line, and they go, tis thee, my lord. And then, yes, yes, okay. Tis thee, my lord. And then you just carry on, and the audience will just go, okay, they've screwed up there, but they got the line, and we're on. So
I mean,
it doesn't matter in stand-up so much. I just say, that's better. But the point is, once I've learned that, then I learn the language. That's the weird thing. I'm going to learn the play first, because once the play's up and running, I can do the gigs, I can go out there, and then I can learn how to speak the language.
But I feel like your secret weapon is your brother.
He's a very good secret weapon to have. He has the same sense of humor, and I suddenly realized he's the perfect person to work with as a language consultant. My brother's really strong on grammar and loves being precise with grammar, whereas me and my manager, Helen, we're both communicators first and grammar second.
Mm.
And that's an easier place to go for. If you communicate first and you get your grammar right second, then you will plow on in.
I always thought that there's two kinds of people. There are people that are like unafraid of just blah and like saying whatever they want, you know, just going for it, not caring about getting it wrong. And then there are the people.
Communication first people.
Right, communication first, like you. But I'm the opposite. I'm like, I can understand everything that's going on. I can understand it all. But if I'm saying it, I'm just terrified. Just like,
It's how much you can smash through humiliation. My gift to myself, accidentally coming out as transgender 30 years ago, when I walked out the door in 1985, in heels and makeup, there was so much humiliation coming my way. I was just trying to keep, you know, just trying to go around town and exist.
Mm.
But people would turn to you and point, look, whisper, shout, scream abuse, whatever it was, different levels of that. But being able to go through that humiliation, and it got better. And now I don't give a monkey's, and actually no one shouts anything. And in Britain, people know me, so it's kind of positive. Whereas in France, well, I'm not well known. I have had the negative things, but I will go and confront the negative things. And
so you have no fear, basically. You've gotten
past. I have
taken
my fear level way down, but I still sense fear, but I don't. But
you don't let it consume you.
It's weird, actually. I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing, but when I feel I've been insulted, I will turn around and go back out and go and stand next to them or confront.
You're a fighter, not a flighter.
Well, yeah, you know, I wanted to be in Special Forces when I was a kid. Seriously, I was going to be paratroops or Marines and then go Special Forces. SAS is what they have in our country. And that was a serious, considered plan. An officer cadetship, you do 3 years, they pay for you at university, then you go off. I don't know whether I would have got into them. But
what happened? Why didn't you go that path?
Because I also wanted to act. There's also being transgender, that where did that fit in? And also, which war would they send you off to? Mm. I don't know. World War II was a very clear war. The other ones have been less clear. And so I thought, okay, there's more maneuverability in this. I'm gonna leave that in a bag, and I'm just gonna go for the creative side of me. But my career is run on military lines, so that's it's tricky being transgender and being able to play roles like in Hannibal and Treasure Island and stuff, and then tour the world and play Hollywood Bowl, Madison Square Garden, tour in four languages.
What's tricky about it? What do you mean?
Well, if you list all the people who've done it, you notice it's a little tricky because there's not a truckload of people who've done it because it's tricky to put together. They won't let you play if you're transgender. Then they won't let you play
certain roles,
boy roles anymore. I got boy mode and girl mode, you know. And if I'm, and I've been trying to do this thing, if I can still play boy, because there's a lot of boy genetics in me, and then there's girl genetics. So, because there's both genetics in me, I thought I'll just keep playing both things, and that's a little tricky to pull off because there's not a whole thing of, hey, it's that old transgender thing. There's tons of people doing this. Hey, I will give them some of these roles, some of those roles, let them do it.
You can do whatever you want.
You know.
I was going to be in the army when I was a kid. Yes. And I say that and people go, no, I was. I was going to be in the army when I was a kid. Because if you're transvestite, you're actually a male tomboy. That's where the sexuality is. Yeah, it's not drag queen. No, gay men have got that covered. And this is male tomboy. And people do get that mixed up and they put transvestite there. No. A little bit of a crowbar separation, thank you. And gay men, I think, would agree. And it's male lesbian. That's really where it is, okay? Because it's true, because most transvestites fancy girls, so fancy women, so that's where it is. So running, jumping, climbing trees, putting on makeup when you're up there, that's where it is. So, I didn't join the army, as you might have noticed, because there's not much makeup in the army, is there? No? They only have that nighttime look, and that's a bit slapdash, isn't it? That's a bit... And they look a mess. And so you can't join. They go, no, you can't. It's wrong shade of lipstick for the army, I'm afraid. And they're missing a huge opportunity here, because we all know one of the main elements of attack is the element of surprise. So what could be more surprising than the 1st Battalion, Transvestite Brigade? Airborne Wing. The Airborne Wing parachuting into dangerous areas with fantastic makeup. And a fantastic gun. And the opposing forces going, fucking hell, look at these guys. Hey, look at that guy. They've got guns. Jesus, where's my gun? Ah, bugger. I was so surprised. Were you surprised? I was surprised. Anyway, so.
The thing is, languages can't be that hard. Some of them are harder, but they're not that hard, because all Mandarin Chinese kids speak Mandarin Chinese, all Russian kids speak Russian, all Arabic kids speak Arabic. You know, you never go to a country and say, these kids didn't manage to get the language, so they just sit in the corner and point at things.
It's just that hurdle of humiliation. I think that's the
greatest
hurdle. It
is the hurdle of humiliation. That is the thing that I have given myself accidentally by realizing I was transgender and coming out 30 years ago, that I worked out what it is to walk through humiliation. I can add things on to what I do and go through the early part of the humiliation when people say, you're an idiot for doing this, and what you're doing is rubbish, and we hate you for it, and la-da-da-da-da. I can walk through that.
Well, Eddie Izzard, thank you so much for stopping by and talking with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It was really fun. It was really fun. Thanks to Eddie, and thanks to you podcast listeners for tweeting at him and being your supportive selves. We can do anything. I'm feeling really empowered at the moment. Who do you want to hear from next? Tweet at us, at LangoPod, or you can get me at Porzuki, that's P-O-R-Z-U-C-K-I. And as always, thanks for listening.
7 seconds.
That's what happened. English, the language that you speak and I speak, this, the language that's become the lingua franca, whatever the fuck that means around the world. It's taken off because on its basic level, it is terribly simple. You know, we have apple and apples. I want an apple, I'm going to give you an apple. That apple came to me, I'll send you an apple, of the apple, to the apple, by the apple. Boy, it's just fucking apple and apples. And it would be apple-orum, apple-eatis, apple-artis, fucking all that. Someone, one of us, years ago, a bunch of them got together. I don't know who it was, but clever. No masculine. Is it masculine or feminine or neuter, the apple? It's a fucking apple. Stop fucking around.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
It snowed over the weekend, but not that much.
I'm as clear as a bell, and you're as clear as a bell.
Okay. I think
what's it like to you?
It sounds pretty good. I can't hear myself back anymore.
Okay.
I don't know if they briefed you anything about Eddie, what the podcast is, but we...
I've listened to you. I listened to you going, pretty please, could you come on the thing?
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. Good. Yay, the power
and I was thinking,
of podcasting.
I was thinking, actually, oh, yeah, I think I'm going to get in contact with... How do I get... And I looked at my diary and go, oh, no, we've already arranged this. This is already happening.